Hello, this is Terry Burdick reading from with you today from the Danville Commercial News, the weekend edition for April 19th and 20th. We'll start today on the first page with the headline, Learning is Fun. Southwest Elementary students take part in first Wax Museum by Kayla White. Fourth graders at Southwest Elementary School in Danville took part in their first Wax Museum, a hands-on project requiring students to interview people in the community about their careers, then put together a display and presentation of what they learned. Students dressed as nurses, factory workers, barbers, firemen, and more lined a hallway Thursday, standing in front of displays they'd created and waiting for someone to come to step up to the button on the floor in front of them to receive their presentation. I've been in this career for 2 years, 10-year-old Troyana Eads said, holding a handheld mirror, shears, and a comb. One thing about my job is that I can use different tools to make different haircuts. When I was little, I wanted to be a pro soccer player, but then I decided that I would just do this barber thing instead. Now I own my own barbershop. Eads continued, telling the story of Damian Landon, the barber she interviewed who works at Rodriguez Cuts in Danville. Not everything about being a barber is fun, though, Eads learned. One thing I don't like about is when you get tiny hairs stuck in your skin, she said. The Wax Museum project is part of the school's Career Week, teacher Ray McNeil said. McNeil, who is also the Advanced VIA Individual Determination, AVID, coordinator for Southwest Elementary, said the project was all about making sure the kids learn new skills and have fun while they're at it. The AVID program is a statewide initiative designed to help prepare students for their future, whether that involves college or going straight into a trade or career field. It is specifically designed to help prepare students who come from demographics that are underrepresented in higher education. We usually have presenters come in the building and give a presentation talking about their job, but we decided to give the kids some ownership this time, McNeil said. Adeline Bauer, 9, did a presentation on the daily life of a nurse. The first thing I do in the morning is get reports about the patients. Obviously, the next thing I do is give medicine to patients in the rooms, Bauer said. Soon after, I do wound care, and I help some people go to the restroom. Bauer emphasized the importance of going into the nursing field with eyes wide open. Don't be a nurse if you don't truly care about people. Sometimes people are grumpy because they're sick or tired. You need to have a lot of patience, even when people aren't being the nicest, Bauer said. Being a nurse is about helping others, and if that's you, I say go for it, she says, beaming. The hands-on multi-step project was a first for most of the students, McNeil said. They had to find somebody to interview for their job, they had to do a research packet about the job, and then create their presentation board. So I'm just so proud of them, McNeil said. The project has been a resounding success, McNeil said. They're having fun, and that's the whole goal, so that's incredible. I'm just so happy with the way that it's turned out, she added. Continuing on page 1, judge strikes suit against D-118. Town has 30 days to refile for a temporary restraining order, by Kayla White. Incoming Danville District 118 school board member Tony Town filed a suit in the Fifth Circuit Court for a temporary restraining order against the current board for what she calls violations of the Illinois Open Meetings Act. In the initial hearing on Friday, April 18th, Honorable Judge Nicholas J. Bolio moved to strike Town's request due to procedural deficiencies. Town represented herself while D-118 was represented by attorney Stephanie E. Jones, legal counsel for the board. According to Boilo, requests for a temporary restraining order require a complaint listing each cause of action as well as allegations to justify those causes of action, a motion explaining why the TPO is being requested, which could be supplemented by affidavits, and a memorandum of law citing specific case law. Boilo did not grant Town a 30-day leave to give her time to refile her paperwork correctly. As to her goals in filing a request for a 10-day TPO, which is the abbreviation for temporary restraining order, Town said that it was just about delaying any action the current board could take in issuing a check to former Superintendent Dr. Alicia Geddes. The way the board conducted this vote was in violation of the Open Meeting Act. That right there should stop anything from proceeding, Town said. Give us 10 days to do an investigation. Geddes was placed on paid administrative leave on February 19, 2025, after being told to come back to working in person by the board and not complying. She had been working remotely since summer 2024 when she received what she called a threatening note from the Ku Klux Klan, as well as threatening calls at the David L. Fields building. Geddes claimed to have been complying with the direction of the majority of the board. Board members Kimberly Corley, Darlene Halloran, and Alice Payne voted against the settlement with Geddes, while Thomas Miller, alongside outgoing board members Ashton, Tyson Parks, and Shannon Schroeder, voted in favor of the settlement at the last board meeting on April 9th. During that meeting, Halloran said she believed four members of the board had been colluding to plan their votes ahead of the public meetings without consulting the other three members, something, if true, is a violation of the Illinois Opens Meeting Act. According to the language of the Act, no final action may be taken at a closed meeting. Final action shall be preceded by a public recital of the nature of the matter being considered and other information that will inform the public of the business being conducted. A meeting includes any gathering, whether in person or by video or audio conference, telephone call, electronic means such as, without limitation, electronic mail, electronic chat, and instant messaging, or other means of contemporaneous interactive communication, of a majority of a quorum of the members of a public body held for the purpose of discussing public business. If four members of the seven-member board were to meet and plan how to vote ahead of the official public meeting, this would violate the law, an action carrying a Class C misdemeanor if convicted. A key issue that concerns Town and her constituents, she said, is the refusal on the part of Ashton to divulge the official dollar amount of the settlement with Geddes to all members of the board and the public. When Corley asked Ashton directly to share with her the dollar amount of the proposed settlement at the April 9th meeting, he first said he didn't have the number, then said even if he did, he wouldn't divulge it with the public until it was signed. It could be $12,000, it could be $1 million, or it could be $2.2 million. No one knows. Some of the board members know, but they're not saying anything, Town said. Town is unsure if she will move forward and refile her request for a TPO. I don't have a legal background. I reached out to several attorneys. I've made 6 to 10 calls to attorneys, she said. They already had represented District 118 in some fashion, and so they couldn't take on my case. I have to have representation. As to why it matters so much to her, Town said it's about doing her job as an elected official. I think that the majority of the public feels the way that I feel, and that's why I'm here. I'm representing the voice of our taxpayers, Town said. As of Friday afternoon, more than 700 people have signed a petition on change.org to urge a local court to delay the severance payment and the district to conduct an inclusive investigation. Judge Boileau also told Town she would need to send copies of her filed complaint, as well as a hearing notice to Jones, in order for him to reconsider her request after the 30-day leave term is up. According to Jones, the defendants did not know about the suit or the hearing until reading a news story Thursday, April 17th. Interim Superintendent John Hart has since said since nothing happened, he had no comment. In more community news, Weiss honored for 42 years of service. Westville Mayor looks forward to traveling and disconnecting, by Kayla White. Mike Weiss is looking forward to disconnecting from everything later this month when he officially retires as mayor of the village of Westville. At the village council meeting on Wednesday, April 16th, Weiss was honored by an official House of Representatives certificate recognizing his service in the community. His leadership has been demonstrated through his direction of the entire workforce and decision-making for the benefit of the village's residents, read Mary Catherine Robertson, Constituent Services Director for Congresswoman Robin Kelly. Weiss's leadership is a true testament to his ability to handle multiple responsibilities, Robertson read. During his 24 years as mayor, Weiss served as liquor commissioner, health commissioner, business license commissioner. He has also served police chief, public works director, village attorney, and zoning administrator. Before serving as mayor, Weiss worked as a police officer for the village for 18 years. Representative Kelly also recognized Weiss's unwavering dedication to both his career and community across his career. The consistent appointments demonstrate mutual love and respect he shares with his community, Roberson read. Mr. Weiss has dedicated his life to public service and has achieved numerous achievements throughout his lifetime. The certificate was signed by Representative Kelly. Village of Westville employees honored Weiss by planting a tree in Zamberletti Park in his honor. This dedication recognizes the correlation between man and history to one another. Trees symbolize growth, strength, and resilience, Police Chief Justin Varnell read on behalf of the employees. Every ring this tree develops will mark another year of our Westville heritage, Varvel read, adding that the tree would nurture hope for the future. A plaque dedicated to Weiss will soon be erected next to the newly planted tree, Varvel said. State Representative Brandon Schweitzer also honored Weiss at the meeting, presenting him with a laminated copy of a news story about him. I just wanted to honor you for your 24 years of service as mayor of the village of Westville and wish you all of the best wishes and happiness in a well-earned retirement, Schweitzer said. When it was his turn to speak, Weiss thanked the board members he has served alongside over the years. You got 6 board members. If they weren't here, we couldn't get things done. They help run different organizations. They get things purchased to help the public boards to get their job done. So I appreciate their work too, Weiss said. When asked what accomplishment he was most proud of during his career serving Westville, Weiss said it was the revitalization of Zambrilletti Park, which he said was possible through a grant from the late Steve Bennett, as well as another $50,000 grant. The ball lines are all redone. They're putting all new LED lights. They did the pickleball court last year, and it's up and running, Weiss said. That's a big thing for the kids and the community. I think it's a good deal. When newly elected Mayor Troy Striben officially takes the helm at the council's April 30th meeting, we said he looks forward to spending more time traveling. I look forward to just relaxing for a little while, we said. I'm about to get a lot of car shows in this summer. Weiss owns a 1970 Chevelle SS that he and his wife like to show off in car shows around the country. He said he also looks forward to getting away for a few days without worrying about getting a phone call bringing him back to town for an emergency. His parting words for the people of Westville are to get more involved and attend village council meetings. Usually we have 3 or 4 people attend. If you got a house full, you did something wrong, Weiss said. I understand people want to complain. That's good. But come and see what we're doing. That way you'll understand what's going on and why. I think people need to get involved more instead of just complaining on social media, Weiss said. As for Mayor-elect Striben, Weiss advised him to listen and go with his gut. Just go with your heart. You know what the town needs or wants. Just listen to people because they know what they want and some things you can do. Just listen to people and then go where you can help, he said. Our final front page story today, Bivens out after Fisher Theater restructuring. Greer takes over as interim executive director on May 1st by Kayla White. Due to issues concerning the sustainability and longevity of the historic Fisher Theater, the Vermilion Heritage Foundation announced Thursday, April 17th, that it would be restructuring and that Executive Director Crystal Bivens' last day would be April 30th. Through careful consideration, we have chosen a path forward that balances fiscal responsibility with our commitment to providing access to the arts for this community for many years to come, the press release read. After several years of nonprofit struggles and hands-on learning, the board has made the difficult but necessary decision to restructure its organizational model. This restructuring includes the transition from a full-time executive director to a part-time executive director. Bivens has served as executive director since May 1, 2024, and as operations director since July of 2021. Regarding Bivens' exit from the role, the press release said the board are deeply grateful for her leadership, support, and extensive efforts to keep the Fisher running during her 4 years of service. Crystal has been a cornerstone for fulfilling the mission of the theater and a steady and professional presence for our patrons, staff, and volunteers, the release read. As to why the restructuring of the organization means Bivens is out, neither she nor incoming interim executive director Ashton Greer would comment. While this transition is hard, I want to focus on the incredible experiences I've had over the past almost 4 years. Working at the Fisher has been one of my most fulfilling chapters of my life, Bivens said in an email to volunteers. I've fallen in love with this beautiful historic theater, but even more so, I've been honored to work alongside all of you. You, our amazing volunteer team, have truly become my family, she said. Your loyalty, hard work, and passion have been the heartbeat of every event and every show. None of it would have been possible without you. This place is something special, and your dedication is what will carry it forward, Bivens said in closing. Greer will be stepping down from her position as board president as she steps into the interim executive director role, while Rui Sandusky will be filling the role of board president for the remainder of the year. The Vermilion Heritage Foundation remains steadfast in its mission to steward this amazing landmark for future generations While adapting to the realities of a changing nonprofit landscape, the press release read, we remain fully dedicated to the vitality and longevity of the Fisher. Though Greer would not comment on Bivens' exit, she did invite those interested in the success and longevity of the theater who want to get involved as donors, volunteers, or patrons to reach out to the board by emailing her at director@fishertheater.com. As we've reached the middle of our time together today, I thought I would read the death notices that were received by 5 p.m. on Friday. In Tilton, Shirley A. Gorham, age 86, passed away on Wednesday, April 16th at OSF Heart of Mary in Urbana. Her visitation will be from 10 to 11 a.m. on Tuesday, April 22nd at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center in Danville. Her service will be on Tuesday, April 22nd at the funeral home with burial at Sunset Memorial Park. In Savannah, Georgia, Linda Sue Delanoy Liggett, age 68, passed away on April 10th, surrounded by family in Florida. A celebration of life will be held later, and she will be buried at Saints Peter and Paul Cemetery in Westville. In other death news, a name that we may have all known, game show host Martindale dies at 91, and this comes to us from the Associated Press. Wink Martindale, the genial host of such hit shows as Gambit and Tic-Tac-Toe, who also did one of the first recorded television interviews with a young Elvis Presley, has died. He was 91. Martindale died earlier this week at Eisenhower Health in Rancho Mirage, California, according to his publicist. Martindale had been battling lymphoma for a year. He was doing pretty well up till a couple of weeks ago, said his publicist from a phone call in Nashville. Gambit debuted on the same day in September 1972 as The Price is Right with Bob Barker and The Joker's Wild with Jack Barry. From the day it hit the air, Gambit spelled winner, and it taught me a basic tenet to keep truly successful game show. Kiss. Keep it simple, stupid, Martindale wrote in his 2000 memoir, Winking at Life. Like playing old maids as a kid, everyone knows how to play 21, i.e. blackjack. Gambit had been beating its competition on NBC and ABC for over 2 years, but a new show debuted in 1975 on NBC called Wheel of Fortune. By December 1976, Gambit was off the air, and Wheel of Fortune became an institution that is still going strong today. Martindale bounced back in 1978 with Tic-Tac-Toe, the classic X's and O game on CBS that ran until 1985. Overnight, I had gone from the outhouse to the penthouse, he wrote. He presided over the 88-game winning streak of Navy Lieutenant Tom McKee, who earned over $300,000 in cash and prizes that included 8 cars, 3 sailboats, and 16 vacation trips. At the time, McKee's winnings were a record for a game show contestant. I love working with contestants, interacting with the audience, and to a degree watching lives change, Martindale wrote. Winning a lot of cash can cause that to happen. Martindale wrote that producer Dan Enright once told him that in the 7 years he hosted Tic-Tac-Toe, he gave away over $7 million in cash and prizes. Martindale said his many years as a radio DJ were helpful to him as a game show host because radio calls for constant ad-libs, and he learned to handle almost any situation in the spur of the moment. He estimated that he hosted nearly 24 game shows during his career. Martindale wrote in his memoir that the question he got asked most often was, "Is Wink your real name?" The second was, "How did you get into game shows?" He got his nickname from a childhood friend. Martindale is no relation to University of Michigan defensive coordinator Don Martindale, whose college teammates nicknamed him Wink because of their shared last name. Born Winston Conrad Martindale on December 4, 1933, in Jackson, Tennessee, he loved radio since childhood and at age 6 would read aloud the contents of advertisements in Life magazine. He began his career as a disc jockey at age 17 at WPLI in his hometown, earning $25 a week. After moving to WTJS, he was hired away for double the salary by Jackson's only other station, WDXI. He next hosted mornings at WHBQ in Memphis while attending Memphis State. He was married and the father of 2 girls when he graduated in 1957. Martindale was in the studio, although not working on air that night, when the first Presley record, That's All Right, was played on WHBQ on July 8, 1954. Martindale approached fellow DJ Dewey Phillips, who had given Presley an early break by playing his song, to ask him and Presley to do a joint interview on Martindale's TV show Top 10 Dance Party in 1956. By then, Presley had become a major star and agreed to the appearance. Martindale and Presley stayed in touch on occasion through the years, and in 1959 he did a transatlantic telephone interview with Presley, who was in the Army in Germany. Martindale's second wife, Sandy, briefly dated Presley after meeting him on the set of G.I. Blues in 1960. He's survived by Sandy, a second wife of 49 years, and children Lisa, Madeline, and Laura, and numerous grandchildren. He was preceded in death by his son, Wink Jr. Martindale's children are from his first marriage, which ended in divorce in 1972. Returning to our local news, Danville Farmers Market announces 2025 dates. The Danville Farmers Market is pleased to announce the summer market season for 2025 will begin on Saturday, May 17th and run for every Saturday through October 4th. The hours will be 8 a.m. until noon, and the site is the DIY Storage Building at 2721 North Vermilion. In addition to the entrance from Vermilion Street, you can also access the market from Townway at the old Kmart entrance and Liberty via the Village Mall. There is plenty of parking on the east and west ends of the lot, and it is smooth enough for wheelchairs, scooters, and walkers. The market will feature 30 to 50 vendors every Saturday, a food truck, a kids' activity booth, and other special events. The Danville's Farmers Market will accept link and other and offer a free matching voucher to purchase fruits and vegetables for every dollar you use on link purchases. There is also a Danville Farmers Market loyalty program, which awards $2 in farmer market bucks for every $20 spent at the market. Danville Farmer Market Bucks can be used as gift cards or as a way of saving for future purchases. For more information, email danvillefarmersmarket2017@gmail.com. Laura Lee Fellowship House launches fundraising campaign. This is a staff report. Want to invest in the future of Vermilion County? The board of directors at Laura Lee Fellowship House has announced the launch of a new fundraising campaign to support operational costs to enhance student programs and community involvement. Laura Lee Fellowship House, located just north of Danville City Center, is a community haven committed to uplifting Danville's underserved multicultural families. This initiative will continue the legacy of investment in youth development, building on the organization's rich history of over 81 years of growth and service. This campaign is more than just a fundraiser. It's an investment in the future, says Dwight Lucas, who was himself deeply influenced by his years attending after-school programs at Laura Lee. By contributing, donors will help shape the lives of young individuals, providing them with the support and opportunities they need to grow. Since its inception, Laura Lee has been committed to fostering education and personal growth. This campaign seeks to fund essential operations, including staffing for after-school tutoring, curriculum development, and mentoring, while also providing a safe and supportive space for children in the evenings. The goal is to offer resources that bolster self-esteem and provide mentorship. Community kickoff events. The community is invited to two special events at Laura Lee Fellowship House at 212 East William Street to kick off the event. There will be a meet and greet on May 16th from 5 to 8 p.m. The drop-in social gathering will allow alumni, business partners, and supporters to reconnect. Attendees will have the opportunity to sign a memory book and complete forms for the commemorative memory bricks. This homecoming-style event will feature historic photos and shared stories, allowing participants to journey back down memory lane. The annual dinner will take place on May 17th at 6 p.m., doors opening at 5 p.m. Dinner tickets cost $35. The event will be an elegant evening featuring musical entertainment, a keynote address from Gisetta Robinson, Chief of Staff, Blacks in Government, Washington, D.C., testimonials, a brief history overview, and special recognitions. Why support this campaign? Supporters of this campaign will help carry forward the legacy of Laura Lee's impact, ensuring that new generations of students and future community leaders have the resources they need to succeed. Contributions will help open doors for more success stories, backed by a board with a track record of strong leadership and credibility, a news release states. Lucas understands the value of providing students with access to successful, committed adults and opportunities to visit new places inside and outside of the community. When you don't have exposure, you limit your belief system what you see every day, he says. In other news that affects affect our senior population, Social Security rescinding its plan to end phone-based filing called a win for Illinois seniors. And this article comes to us from Isabella Schoonover from the Capital News Illinois with a Dateline Springfield. The Illinois chapter of AARP played a role in the Trump administration reversing itself and allowing Social Security beneficiaries to have the option of filing for benefits over the phone. The continuation of phone-based filing is an about-face of a plan set forth in mid-March by the Social Security Administration to restrict telephone services for beneficiaries nationwide. Nearly 100,000 Illinoisans mobilized against the plan by writing to Congress during the month of March. Nationally, AARP members sent more than 2 million emails denouncing the proposed changes. In response to the widespread pushback, the SSA issued a series of updates on X, formerly Twitter, withdrawing its previously announced plan and reinstating phone services for all claim types, including those applying for retirement, Social Security disability insurance, Medicare, and supplemental security income. The new plan now requires in-person claims processing and identity proofing only for calls flagged as potentially fraudulent, according to a press release Monday from Illinois AARP. This is great news for older Americans, said Ryan, the Senior Director of Advocacy and Outreach at AARP Illinois. New rule caused web crashes and service disruptions. AARP Illinois and its members came to the Illinois State Capitol on April 10th to express their frustration with the recent federal actions and call on lawmakers to strengthen SSA customer service. Members have reported significant disruptions in service in recent months, including long wait times at SSA field offices, frequent website crashes, and an increase in calls getting disconnected due to a lack of available representatives. As a retiree, I count on my Social Security benefits, and they actually provide more than half of my monthly income, said Sandra McAvoy, an AARP member and volunteer with the Illinois State Legislature. That income has enabled me to live independently and comfortably. In Illinois, about 2.3 million people receive some form of Social Security benefits, and more than 40% of Illinois residents age 65 or older rely on Social Security for at least half of their income, while around 20% rely on it for at least 90%, according to AARP. The SSA was planning to end phone-based claims as an anti-fraud measure, saying the move would strengthen fraud prevention by forcing individuals to go online or visit local field offices to prove their identities and file for benefits. AARP said this would make it difficult for older adults, people with disabilities, and those in rural areas to access their benefits. The proposed changes were unacceptable. About 140,000 people aged 65 and older in Illinois live more than 45 miles round trip from the nearest Social Security office, according to an April 8th report by the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities. Once there, individuals report having to wait for hours in long lines to see an available customer service agent. The only alternative to in-person and phone services, the SSA's online portal system, is not a reliable option for many beneficiaries. Roughly 28% of households in Illinois do not have subscriptions to high-speed internet, according to a 2024 report. Well, thank you to AARP and our local citizens for making a case for that was important to those changes in Social Security and having them rescinded. Well, we always seem to run out of time way before we run out of news. Let's take a quick look at our local roundup of prep sports over the past week. Here are just some baseball scores from around our listening area. Oakwood 11, Tuscola 4, Iroquois West 6, Hopeston Area 1, Arcola 14, GRFC 1, Salt Fork 8, Watsika 1, AP 12, Cisna Park 1, Southmont 16, Fountain Central 6, Covington 8, Attica 7, West Vigo 22, North Vermilion 2, and Westville 12, BHRA 2. Monday starts off a big day of prep baseball. All of these games start on Monday at 4:30. Georgetown Ridge Farm will be at Bismarck Henny Rossville Alvin. Hoopston area will be at Oakwood, North Montgomery at Covington, Salt Fork at Schlarman Academy, Watsika at Armstrong Potomac, Westville will be at Iroquois West, Fountain Central at Western Boone. In prep boys golf, Covington on Monday Fountain Central and Park Heritage will be at Seeker at 3:30 at Harrison Hills. In prep softball, Georgetown Ridge Farm will be at Bismarck Henning Rossville Alvin, Hoopston Area at Oak Ridge Larman, North Montgomery at Covington, Watsika at Armstrong Potomac, and Westville at Iroquois West. This has been Terry Burdick reading to you from the Danville Commercial News. I hope you all have a wonderful week, and I'll read again with you soon.